Current State on 90.5 WKAR. You can catch all of our segments at WKAR.org. You can listen live at WKAR.org as well. I'm Mark Bayshore. To see Detroit at its best, you might have to go back about 50 years. Since then, the population has steadily declined. Homes are vacant, streetlights don't work, and the Motor City has struggled through a bankruptcy. But in 1963, the car business was booming, Motown was bursting onto the national music scene, and Martin Luther King Jr. tried out his I Have a Dream speech in Detroit a couple of months before making it famous in Washington. Current State Scott Pohl is here with more on a new book about Detroit in 1963. Who's the author, Scott?
Well, Mark, it's Pulitzer Prize winner David Marinus, associate editor of the Washington Post. He's the author of highly praised books about Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, and Vince Lombardi. We discussed his newest book, Once in a Great City, A Detroit Story, ahead of a visit to Okemos to talk about it on Thursday. David Marinus, welcome to Current State.
Thanks. Great to be with you.
You spent your early childhood in Detroit, but you haven't lived in the city for many years. What drew you to this story?
Well, you're right. I was born in Detroit. I spent my first 6.5 years there, and it was kind of buried deep inside me. And I was actually watching a commercial in 2011 during the Super Bowl with Eminem driving through the streets of Detroit and seeing the great iconic figures of Detroit, the Joe Louis Fist and the Diego Rivera mural and the Fox Theater.
This is the Motor City, and this is what we do.
It was a Chrysler commercial, just trying to sell cars, but it sold me on the idea of Detroit and what it meant to me and what it meant to the country, and that's when I started thinking about writing a book.
As you looked into Detroit, though, for this book, what turned out to be special about the year 1963, really an 18-month period that includes 1963? What was so special about this time in Detroit?
Well, I think it was a magical time. It was a time of great creativity and promise when Motown was just going off on its first country tour, Motortown Review, when cars were selling more than ever before, when labor under the United Auto Workers and Walter Reuther was very strong, when civil rights was an important factor in Detroit, and Martin Luther King came to the city and gave his I Have a Dream speech there before he did it in Washington. All of these elements of promise were there from 1962 to early 64, which is the period of my book. But you could also see sort of the shadows of what was to come, sadly.
Would you think it's fair to say that Detroit peaked in 1963?
You know, it probably in some ways peaked in the 1950s, to be honest with you, in terms of population. But in terms of its creative promise, I think it's fair to say that that was an incredible period, a magical period of 1963. And you could see even then, sociologists at Wayne State University in 1963 predicted the depopulation that would follow, that the city would lose about 500,000 people every decade, and that's exactly what happened. So in many ways, 63 was kind of a peak.
We're talking with David Marinus about his new book, Once in a Great City. It focuses on Detroit in 1963, perhaps a high water mark in Detroit's history. I want to talk about a few of the major players. You've mentioned Walter Reuther, but let's talk about the mayor. What was the political climate in Detroit like?
The mayor then was Jerome Cavanaugh. He was elected in 1961, largely with the help of a strong African-American vote, succeeding a mayor and a police department that had had very difficult problems with the black community. Cavanaugh was a liberal, progressive acolyte of John F. Kennedy. He was an Irish Catholic, tried to, with a large family, and sort of modeled his family after the Kennedys. And he came in with a progressive agenda that included trying to improve the relations with the blacks of Detroit.
To what degree would you say he succeeded in doing that?
Well, it's kind of part of the tragedy. He brought in a very progressive police chief. And when Martin Luther King came to Detroit in the summer of 63 for the Walk to Freedom, he was greeted at the airport by the police chief, who said, "There will be no police dogs attacking you here." This was right after Birmingham and the horrible incidents of police racism in the South. So there was a very strong effort, but in the end, it wasn't enough. And there was actually a shooting in Detroit that summer of an African-American prostitute by the police that led to sort of an early variation of things we'd seen over the last year in Ferguson, Missouri, and elsewhere. And then, of course, a few years later came the 1967 riots.
You bring up the Walk to Freedom, and of course, a big player in that is the Reverend C.L. Franklin. Talk about his role in the city of Detroit at this time.
What an amazing character. This is Aretha's father, a preacher at New Bethel Baptist Church in Detroit. Very flamboyant, colorful, a little bit looked on with apprehension by the establishment Black Ministerial Alliance because of his colorful ways. But he was a friend of Martin Luther King's, and he helped organize. He really was the key organizer of the Walk to Freedom, which at that time was the largest civil rights march in American history. Franklin was a tremendous preacher who would give sermons that could be attended by as many as 10,000 people. He traveled around the country with his daughters, including Aretha, sort of as a circuit preacher. And he was really quite not only flamboyant but articulate in his preachings.
Lots of us from Michigan are Motown music people, and 1963 really saw Berry Gordy Jr.'s Motown Company burst onto the national scene. Motown really helped shape the image of Detroit in this era, didn't it?
Yeah, it sure did. And think about the incredible talent that was on that bus that left for the first Motown Review. It had Smokey Robinson and the Miracles, Marvin Gaye, Little Stevie Wonder at age 13, Mary Wells, Martha Reeves and the Vandellas. The Supremes were sort of the opening act. The Temptations were singing back up. The Marvelettes. It was Marvin Gaye. It was unlike any group before or since, really, in terms of its pure talent. And it was all created by Berry Gordy, who started with an $800 loan from his family to get Motown started a few years earlier.
If you want to step back in time in Detroit, there may be no better place to do that than Hitsville, USA.
I think that's true. You know, it's not there anymore. It left for Los Angeles in the early 1970s, but there is still the Motown Museum on West Grand Boulevard, and you can still get that great vibration going over there.
One of the major business figures in Detroit in this age, maybe the major figure, is Henry Ford II, Hank the Deuce, another major figure in your book. Talk about the business climate and Ford and the auto industry in 1963.
Well, as I said, they were selling, the book starts, one of the opening scenes is the 1962 Detroit Auto Show, which introduced the 1963 models, which sold more than any in history. But Detroit was a little bit blinded by its short-term success. It was moving back to selling big cars, not seeing Japan on the horizon. But at the same time that those 1963 models were being introduced, Hank the Deuce and his top salesman slash vice president, Lee Iacocca, were developing a new car in private that would be unveiled at the end of my book, which was the Mustang, which had the greatest marketing campaign in automotive history.
David Marinus will visit Lansing on November 12th to talk about his newest book, Once in a Great City, looks at what might be the best year in Detroit history, 1963. You've hinted at this, but I want to expand on it a little bit. Were there early signs in 1963 that might have foretold the decline to come, the riots, the population decline, and ultimate bankruptcy?
Yeah, I think so. You know, people tend to blame Detroit's demise on factors that came later, from the riots to the city government pensions to municipal corruption. But you could see structurally that it was suffering already in 1963. I call it a luminescent time, but the brightness was actually a dying light. Structurally, the highways had actually made it easier for people to leave the city. Urban renewal, which African Americans called Negro removal, was unsettling the different neighborhoods in the city. The shopping centers were forming a ring around the city then, from Eastland to Westland. The auto industry was already leaving Detroit to its later regret in some cases, looking for short-term gains elsewhere. All of these factors were leading really productive taxpayers to leave the city and causing many of the problems that were to come.
You hadn't personally lived in Detroit in many years, but I know you spent time in Detroit while working on this book. Do you have some personal observations about modern-day Detroit?
Oh, yes. Every time I came back to Detroit, I visited 8 times during the research, and I would say that I do see more energy every time, and yet there are still severe, if not intractable, problems dealing with housing and jobs. You know, I went to visit the house where I lived as a 6-year-old, a flat on Dexter, and it was gone. It had been torn down, and probably 5 out of the 8 houses on that block were either gone or abandoned. So there is a renaissance in Detroit. Young people are moving there, foodies and techies and artists and people, young people who can invent their lives there. Major investors are coming into the downtown, but there still are wide swaths of Detroit that are pretty forlorn and need help.
What do you think people today who care about Detroit, love Detroit, what do you think people are to make of how great the city seemed to be in 1963? I mean, in the early 60s, Detroit was even a very close finalist for an International Olympic Games. Are there lessons to be learned by looking back at this era?
Well, I don't know quite what the lessons are, except to pay attention to all of the small signs that can lead to something and don't be blinded by short-term success. The larger lesson of Detroit is that it gave so much to this country, and we tend to blame Detroit for its own problems, and maybe it's starting to turn from a symbol of a city of ruins to a city of hope, and I think all of us should ask what we could do for Detroit, the city that gave so much to all of us.
It makes me think that people around the country could learn something from reading about Detroit history and seeing how it compares to modern-day Detroit.
Oh, I think absolutely. This Detroit is a symbol of America in so many ways, of urban America. And it's so this story is not just a story about Detroit, but about the problems and promise of this whole country.
David Marinus is an associate editor at The Washington Post. He'll talk about his new book, Once in a Great City, A Detroit Story, on November 12th. The Capital Area District Library is bringing him to Kinawa Middle School in Okemos starting at 7 p.m. Registration is required. David Marinus, great talking with you. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Scott.
For Current State, I'm Scott Pohl.